The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Hank, Hank Hodgson. And here I am. We got a special show today. Sitting right next to me is Elliot Harrison. Hi, Elliot.
Hey, it's a football-iest offseason of the year, and I got to get something off my keister. You know, it's supposed to be Dynasty Week, and why don't we have the Steelers on Thursday? What's with the Cowboys? The Steelers should be on Thursday, on Wednesday, on Tuesday. We should do a Football Life Mark Malone. What's going on, fella?
Elliot, we're going to get to that, but first of all, I'm very excited. We got from the Finsiders, Dave Dameshek.
All right.
I would like to see a Mark Malone Football Life. That would be very entertaining. They could do 20 minutes alone on his mustache. That was a terrific job there, Handsome Hank. I'm sorry for being tardy.
You are a little tardy.
Yeah. Well, I told producer Black Tie behind the glass what the score was. I was doing the Finsiders, like you said. I had to talk Miami Dolphins football.
Wait,
AFC
so
East.
You said you so were you, ready to go with 308.
I didn't know how long. Well, listen, I'm delightful once you get me on the line. But, they kept me long.
You were. Let me keep the show on the road. Okay,
go ahead.
You were on the Finsiders. What is that?
I know what it is.
You don't know the Finsiders?
I'd love to. Well, just explain. I want you to explain what it is.
It is a radio show / digital show, or is it maybe it might be a cable show? Actually, it might air somewhere on television. I'm not positive there. But what was fun today for me was
it's about what the
Miami Dolphins.
The Miami Dolphins.
Yes, yeah.
You were on there.
That's right. I'm a recurring guest on that
how
show.
How did the song go? We're the Miami Dolphins.
That's not how it went.
Miami Dolphins.
Here's how that song
Miami
went.
Miami Dolphins
Don't
number
pretend
one.
Pretend it's the Houston Oilers.
No. Houston Oilers. That's how the song goes. Well, didn't we discuss this? That
we
it was
have
the Oilers
this.
Who did it first, though?
Yes.
That reminds me, we have to do the best fight songs in college and pro, Black Tie. This is the discussion that is ripe for this time of year. I want to do...
Oh, I know the number one for the NFL.
Chargers?
God, it's got to be the Redskins. They're freaking all... It made me so mad. Made all of us
San Diego, Superchargers. San Diego, Superchargers. But the Pittsburgh one, they had the Steeler polka. Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
We're from the town with the Super Bowl.
I'm down with that.
Ba-ba-na-na. Go out and get them Steelers. I talked today on the Finsiders, though.
But so it, my point
with the guy, let me just say something to you because this is
was it
it's
Troy
funny.
Stratford?
We talked to Troy Stratford, and I told him I just talked with my pal Handsome Hank about your rookie season, Troy. Then I shifted gears to OJ McDuffie, hated Nittany Lion. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh, so they're my natural rival, Penn State, and then the host of the show today, John Kangemi, quarterback at Pitt. The Pitt Panther QB, number 15, the successor to your Dan Marino.
That's right.
Early 80s. He played at Pitt. We talked. We reminisced about the old Fiesta Bowl and this, that, and the other. Actually, it's a funny story that Kangemi remembered that was funny. 1985, the Pitt Panthers, in their second game of the year, I think, went to Ross-Ade Stadium to play Purdue. A few noteworthy items from that. Rod Woodson was there playing both sides of the ball for Purdue and would later that year get drafted by, the following spring get drafted by Pittsburgh. Craig Ironhead Hayward, the late great heavyset fellow running the ball for Pitt. Jeff George at quarterback for Purdue. First 4 minutes of the game, two touchdown passes. It was 14-0 Purdue. Then Pitt rallied and whipped them, I think 42-14 or something like that. But the thing that stood out to me was that's the first game I ever went to and got to stand on the sideline with my old man who was a Pitt doctor. So I'm standing on the sideline, and as I say, it got to be a blowout in the second half. My old man, I look at him talking to the starting quarterback, John Kangemi, and he's still playing in the game, you understand, but the defense is out on the field. My old man and Kangemi are talking on the bench, so I'm a preteen kid. I lean my ear in. Whoa, he's talking to the QB. How cool. What are they talking about? He's telling him about his golf round, my father. My father's telling Kangemi, not the other way around. Then on number eight, you know how number eight dog legs there? So then I hit it into the rough there. I said, hey, old man, the guy's playing a college football game. What are you doing? Kangemi remembers that to this day, saying to my father, hey, hold that thought, I'll be right back, then went out onto the field for a series. Is that crazy?
Was that the first time you told him about it today?
He and I had talked about it about a year ago, Kemi and I, but he remembers vividly telling my old man, hold that thought, I'll be right back.
I'm going to go play football.
In a game that counts.
Hey, didn't Pitt with Ironhead, he was great as a senior, right? Ironhead.
Yeah, it was 87, and he had a great year. He should have won the Heisman.
Right, and they played Texas in the Blue Bonnet Bowl and lost, right, with Eric Metcalf, if I'm not mistaken, back when they had the Blue Bonnet Bowl.
That sounds right. I remember the big game of that year was he ran for Ironhead, and he was, you know, was downright fat. I mean, there was not like, oh, he carries a little bit.
But he was quick. He had
a pot belly.
Yeah, he was quick, though, for
his
man.
Signature move was to vault players. I mean, which was a bizarre sight to see a fat guy jumping over guys. And he played the number one mighty Miami Hurricanes, and the Canes won, but Ironhead ran for 250 in that game in the rain. It was a glorious effort. But anyway, all right, listen, fellas, we can continue to just talk about the AFC East and specifically Ryan Tannehill. We didn't jump into it last week, and the talk of NFL quarterbacks, always a juicy subject, but me, Elliot Harrison, and Bucky Brooks all did our lists.
Wait, we got into this a lot.
I know we got into it a lot.
Those lists started from the podcast.
Hi, Black Tie Behind the Glass.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I'm actually about to leave pretty soon, so just in
where are you going
now? Got a meeting to attend.
Now you can get out now. Go ahead.
Why
delay?
No worries. I guess.
Wait, he's really going? That's it, Black Tie? When are we going to go see Mad Max? That's a movie we can agree
I've
on.
Seen it.
I'm still on the fence about that.
It's awesome.
On the fence? How much praise do you need to hear before you sign off?
I've never watched a trailer and thought, oh, I really want to watch that.
Too much action. I just saw it. Let me just tell you everything
too
I need to tell
you. Too much action for Black
Wait, 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 man.
Nothing like The Lion King.
My girlfriend suggested we go see it.
Bloody not.
And my girlfriend suggested, hey, this thing is getting crazy reviews. Do you want to go see it? So we went and saw it. The first 10 minutes, I was like, oh, man, my girlfriend's never going to be able to handle this. That movie is not – I've never seen a movie that's got that much adrenaline, ever.
That's what I'm saying. Like, ever. I still don't know if I'm up for
it. But it's well done. And so I asked my girlfriend after the movie. She was like, I was on the edge of my seat. That was a good movie. I liked it better than T2. How about that?
Whoa. Now we're talking all-time classic action pictures.
I say a lot of crazy things before I leave. I've said a lot of crazy things before in the
past.
Yes,
you have. The Lion King's the best movie ever.
I don't
want people to misunderstand me. I was completely dead serious when I said that. The Lion King is the best
movie. I didn't think you were trying to be precious. I think you believe that.
All right, guys. Ridiculous. Have a good show, though.
Yeah. It's not even the best animated movie of the last quarter century.
Hey, last note on this, man. Seriously, if you're debating seeing that movie, you need to see it while it's in the theater because you're not going to get the same feel watching that sucker on your Apple TV or something.
I'll see just because of how good the reviews have been. But
they're like 90%.
It's very generous.
99, actually, really.
I'll see it because the reviews have been good enough.
Yeah, right. Check it out.
Well, I'd also like you to watch Empire Strikes Back. It's the 35-year anniversary of
today.
I downloaded that on, and I've been wanting to talk to you about this. I downloaded the 4, 5, and 6, which are actually the old movies on Apple TV. Yeah, right. But, you know, for some of the people that listen, they probably don't realize that the old ones are actually 4, 5, and 6 and not 1, 2, 3. I was so disappointed that they are the 1997 re-release ones that have all the extra scenes. Han doesn't shoot first at Mos Eisley like he does in the original because they made it all Disney-fied.
Right, yeah. It wasn't right for Han Solo to be a guy who kills a bounty
alien.
Right.
What is this? I know a Black Tie just walked up to me and showed me on his iPhone in silence. On his iPhone, he typed this out so that I would know. The guy now behind the glass taking Black Tie's place is Sean, who's always there. Black Tie just wrote me a note. His name is Sean.
Wow.
What gives?
Everyone knows Sean.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
His name is Sean. What are we going to call him? We got to call. Hello, Sean. How are you?
Hey, Sean, who's the dude who just left the door behind you? I don't know what that guy's name is.
His name is Sean.
I think his name's T.
He is the weirdest. I mean, what in hell? I can't see that. Too much action. We have to quickly name
him. He looks like Luke Wilson with a stash.
I know. Sean does have a handsome mustache.
Porn
tie done and done. I like it. Yeah. He does look like somebody out of 1978 inappropriate movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's from Tennessee. He's a Tennessee Vols fan. Does that make you a Titans fan?
No.
Really? What's your team?
Seahawks.
How did that happen?
My
front
brother.
Running.
No.
Oh, did you say brother?
Yeah, my brother's.
I thought you said front runner.
You know who else he kind of
brother
looks
is Russell Wilson.
In the face? Who's the guy that plays Two Faces in the Batman movie and was in Aaron Brockovich?
Tommy Lee Jones?
In Aaron Brockovich, played her boyfriend, and he's the Two Face guy, and the guy whose face gets blown off.
I've seen that guy around L.A. a few times. Thomas, I can see his face. He has two first names.
The guy.
Harvey Dent.
Not Bob.
Who's Harvey Dent?
Aaron Eckhart.
You look like Aaron Eckhart.
Oh, I'll take that as a compliment.
I'm thinking of Thomas Jane, who not Aaron
Thomas
Eckhart.
Jane.
But yes, yep. Aaron Eckhart. Yeah, he's one of them ruggedly handsome, but he doesn't look. That's not what
Thomas Jane was.
No, a porn title.
The porn title doesn't look that much like him.
Thomas Jane was Mickey Mantle in 61,
that's
right?
That's correct. That is correct.
And Barry Pepper was Maris.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah. Yes.
So welcome to Movie Talk and goodbye. Now, so we were talking about
quarterbacks.
Oh, but speaking of which, though, handsome, we do, before we leave here today, shame the devil if we don't put a proper bow on Mad Men series. And for that matter, The Letterman Show, two iconic shows. And as much as I love Mad Men, Letterman defining, in my book, to a generation of you know, fellas who, I mean, really, it you can tell it's repeated. It can't be empty genuflection. You know, everybody of a certain age, there's so much snark online. It makes me sick that it's not I said a couple weeks ago, when Bill Simmons and ESPN parted ways, that the reaction from social media, that our default is, I know it's old news, the snark that's required and the immediacy with which you have to level your cynical thoughts about the person. All right, Simmons is gone from ESPN after a decade and a half that was glorious for both sides. But Simmons was a crappy writer, declares certain websites that require.
Only thing on that, though, didn't Simmons, though, unlike David Letterman, I agree with you about David Letterman, and I know you're a fan of Sporty Simmons, but, you know, he took some shots at people that he worked with.
Oh, I'm not.
He's kind of receiving a little bit of karma there.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that, of course, the overarching thought, I would think, would be, wow, this guy, how did he jump the walls and get to the front lines doing it the way he did as a blogger from his Boston that he carved out?
I'm a big fan of his.
This voice that has been mimicked a million times over and everything else. But no, the day of, we have to declare what was wrong with him. Right. I don't mean whatever he did, conduct-wise. I mean his work. It was never that good anyway. You know,
which
I see
false.
The same thing with Letterman. It was time. I'm glad Letterman left, but he should have been gone 10 or 15 years ago. All right, geniuses. You know, Letterman is, like I say, the defining. And I mean, that's not hyperbole. I love The Simpsons. I love Cheers. I was a devotee of both those shows. But nothing really sort of shaped the direction that, I mean, more. I really don't think, it's very difficult to imagine how different, really, I know this sounds crazy and overreaching maybe about one guy and one show, but I wonder how different things would look if the David Letterman, if Late Night with David Letterman and NBC hadn't happened. It was really a hard right turn what he did from the conventional show, and really so many people sort of mimicked him and took things from his tone and the sarcasm. You know, there are a lot of people in this country. Why is 2.5 Men? You know, I got snarky emails this week of when I said, oh, Letterman, this is my favorite bit, this is my favorite guy, whatever. People immediately have to fire back. Well, he wasn't as good. Well, then why didn't he rate as well as Jay Leno? Well, I'm not responsible for the bad taste of America is my answer for that. 2.5 Men is the most successful sitcom out there, too. Does that make it the funniest show? I mean,
yeah, but didn't Jay Leno inherit a brand that was already well established by widely considered the greatest talk show host of all time?
In the early 90s, though, Letterman killed him. Letterman was king, but then the Hugh Grant thing flipped things, and it just never came back, and that happened to work out when ER hit the air and Friends and all that sort of momentum, and they never could get back to it. But yeah, the requirement to say he should have been gone and what he needed, what he should have done from I get it's the bit of critics to do this, or I think it's us sitting here and evaluating who the 18th best thrower of a football on the planet Earth is. Andy Dalton's not good enough by my standards when I couldn't go out and do it. So maybe it makes me a hypocrite, but boy, oh boy, I think you'd be hard pressed to overstate the significance of Letterman. And, you know, Handsome, you're over in England. You're not aware of Letterman, the phenomenon.
I was aware of him, but I wasn't. I mean, the show was never carried there. So there was no way that.
I mean, I really, summer of 83, when we went on school break, I remember I discovered the show. I guess it had been on for, you know, maybe a handful of months before that. And so I started the VHS it. If I didn't stay up through, because it was 12:30 to 1:30, I would VHS it and watch it faithfully. And I did that all the way through the mid to late 90s. I never missed Letterman. It was just the greatest thing. And I've said before, if I may wax saccharine for a moment, I tweeted about this today. It's it really is. The two worlds come together for me in the butterfly effect kind of thing. You know, that I grow up, I start, I love sports. I'm in Pittsburgh, love all things black and gold. But then I start watching Letterman. Those are my two favorite things in the world. You know, and of course, women weren't mucking up any of my time. So I could just, I could give full attention to those two things in life. And then I wind up getting to write on a late night show. And then I get to talk about sports for a living. And but both made pretty much by Jimmy Kimmel. So I was happy for him Kimmel's referencing. I mean, I'm sorry, Letterman's referencing Kimmel, and Kimmel's in the final montage and everything else. And Kimmel says that Letterman gave him some of his ties. That's a pretty neat thing. Imagine
that's
that.
Cool.
If he's your idol, the way Kimmel, I mean, just worships.
Were you
Letterman.
Surprised? So I read the story like a week ago that Kimmel was going to go dark for Letterman's last show, but that Conan and that the other shows were not. Were you surprised by that? That they all didn't give a tip of the cap?
No, I mean, I don't know what I know what Conan did. Conan said, did a lovely little monologue about what Letterman did for him in his early days of his show, which, by the way, was gangbusters. I mean, that was a 2-hour powerhouse of the early days of Letterman on CBS, and then flip over to Letterman's old show, Late Night, run now by Conan O'Brien. The early days of that, I know he was uncomfortable on camera, but the bits were hysterical. Those were above reproach. And so Conan, I guess at the time he said, like, all right, so 11:35 right now on the East Coast, they timed it out. Flip over to Letterman right now. Turn this show off. TiVo it or whatever you want, but watch Letterman right now. Goodbye, goodbye. He and Patton Oswalt were sitting on the couch. But anyway, yeah, it makes me. It's a shame. And Conan, as it happens, on the last show of the Tonight Show that he ever did, he gave this bizarre speech that seemed misplaced. You know, it's like, oh, it's my last show. I've only been on the air for whatever it was, 6 weeks or whatever, and they're already yanking me off. And he went, the second to last segment was him just talking to camera and saying, hey, kids out there, one thing you should not be in life, don't be a cynic. Just beat that out of yourself. Do not be cynical. That's the worst thing you can be. And, you know, I always talk about vapid cynics, and that's what populate. We have to, oh, Letterman's retiring. Good. He wasn't good anyway. You know, like, well, that's the homage. This is where we are as a society. It seems weird. I don't know. Now I'm like a curmudgeonly old man.
No, it's all right.
All right, let's talk quarterbacks.
What a great guest Dave has been today.
He has. Yeah.
Dave, are you going to be able to stick around for the rest of the show? Will you stay here with us?
I'll do it.
Okay, great.
Did you feel this way about Mick Luckhurst after that show?
Late night show, yeah. Yes.
Mick Luckhurst had the kicker?
he had a football show.
The left-footed kicker from the Falcons was
he's a Brit.
Well, so what? What is that? That guarantees you a talk show?
Dude, you want to find YouTube gold, Mick Luckhurst hosting an NFL show in England. And
it was late night.
And Hank showed it to me a few years ago, and yeah, I love it.
Boy, that sounds
The open was sweet.
All right, let's talk about football. And then okay, we'll do let's some do that. Mad Men, I guess we talked about Letterman a little
bit. Let's do football. Properly. Then Madden.
I got a bone to pick on your quarterback list.
I feel dissatisfied. I know what you're going to say. I feel dissatisfied, by the way, that we can't really have a proper Letterman discussion. We can't bat around our favorite bits, our favorite guests or anything, because I feel like I'm the only person.
No. Well, I could tell you this, that I remember when Refrigerator Perry was on there in 86. I started watching Letterman in 86. So I caught on, I guess, late. I don't know if that's late for catching all of Letterman.
I think people
and,
who saw the NBC show hold that up and have higher regard for the NBC thing. But I also say the CBS show in its first few years was dynamite, too. But anyway.
Yeah, I loved Johnny Carson as a kid. I loved him. And he was my sense of humor. David Letterman, some of it went over my head as a 12-year-old, you know, because he had a different way a different presentation. But when you talk about the butterfly effect of David Letterman, to me, this is going to sound such like low-hanging fruit, but the top 10 list is, of all the things that he did, to me, that was the most powerful thing, the list that he...
By the head writer at the Kimmel Show, when I went there, Steve O'Donnell was the head writer at Letterman, and he's the guy who created the top 10 list. Lovely man. Yeah, so, but like you say, Letterman's sense of humor was different, and it... People didn't get what he was doing, or a percentage at least of America didn't. That's the point with Two and a Half Men. The reason it's popular, the reason more people watch it than other things, is because there's nothing subtle about it. It hits you over the head. It's slapstick. Letterman was about irony. Well, the bits were great, but then he didn't totally buy his own bits that he was doing, so it was always funny. He would take them seriously on some level, but on the other hand, he would undermine them and make fun of the bit that they were in the middle of doing. The set, if they had like a little phony set that they were doing something with, he would rip on it, and he would evaluate people's acting ability in the middle of the bit and that sort of thing. But the under the comment breaths and everything, it wasn't something Johnny Carson did, who also was...
Would you put him over Carson?
I would, but I didn't grow... I mean, that's one of those things. I assume it's sort of...
Because I was genuinely sad when it was Johnny Carson's last show. I think it was Bette Midler, I think, was the guest, if I
recall. I remember watching that. I loved it, but I knew he'd lost his fastball at that point, and I know people hold him up as the greatest of all time, but my generation, it's hard to imagine saying anybody other than Letterman, including Jimmy Kimmel, tips his hat and says, well, obviously, this is the best of all time. All right, football. Pro football, NFL pro football. We did our rankings. I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say? You don't know what I'm going to say.
I know what you're going to say, and it's absolutely valid. When I, you know the cardinal rule here on the show, no jive. And you know what? I don't know if I was jiving myself or I let it slip through the cracks or I wasn't lucid when I was doing it, but I do realize that Tony Romo's too low on my list. I don't know why I had him at 11. That just was a mistake. The point is, Cam Newton gets slept on, so I felt like I have to continue to carry the torch for Cam and acknowledge that, you know, I don't think division titles in and of themselves make you a great QB, but, you know, think about what's gone on in Carolina. He gets there. He has the all-time greatest rookie season in my book. I know you say RG3, but either way, Cam Newton has a sublime rookie season.
Marino, actually, but
you know what? I agree with you about that. But okay, but statistically and otherwise, you can make a pretty powerful case for Cam Newton. Year two, whatever, all the towel on the head business. By the end of that year, he had started to round back into form. And he's won the division the last 2 years. And you talk about crummy rosters, especially on the offensive side. Cam Newton carries that team, and he's 4 years into his career. And people, I don't know if they don't know what to make of him or what, but I think, you know, they add, you know, that last year they have Kelvin Benjamin. Now they get another big kid. The biggest knock on him is that he's inaccurate. Well, those guys cover that up for him. I think he's only getting better, Cam Newton. So I just felt like I had to make a case for Cam when I knew he would slip out of a lot of people's top 10.
I understand.
So you have Romo at 11.
Yeah.
You've got him. You got Eli at 10, Peyton at 9, Phil Rivers at 8. So now you're apologizing, but where do you want to put Romo?
I don't know. Maybe he belongs. What? Well, first of all, you chime in, handsome. Where would you have Romo?
I would put Romo ahead of both the Manning brothers, which is kind of you've got him behind Eli, and you've got Eli behind Peyton. I think I would go I think I would go Romo, Eli, Peyton.
Well, in my list, though, I didn't go 1 through 15 or whatever. I did them by tiers. I put Aaron Rodgers in his own tier at the top.
I got it.
Then there's tier 2. But then Peyton is in tier unclear.
Yes.
I mean, we don't know what it is.
That's fine.
Is he hurt or is he hurt or is he old? If he's fixed, if the quad thing is fixed, then all right, then he'll be a top 5 QB easily. If it's not and he's just an old man now, then he won't be in the top 10.
I'd have Romo at the bottom of tier 2. So right now you have Phil Rivers at 8 at the bottom of tier 2. I would have Romo at 9 at the bottom of
tier. So you'd have Rivers over Romo?
I'd have Rivers over Romo.
Yeah. See, I love Phil Rivers. I could tell you the hardest quarterback I had to place in this list was Drew Brees. That's the one I didn't know what to do with. But I want to ask you this. Okay, so I told you at the end of football season, we were on the podcast, and I told you, Dave, I think people really sleep on Antonio Brown. Like, I think Antonio Brown is a legitimate MVP candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt that way. I thought he's the most important player on the Steelers last year. Would you say that Antonio Brown, and you agreed with me, where would you put Antonio Brown among receivers? 1, 2, arguably 3? I'd say 1, but I'm down with him being up there with Megatron.
Over the last 2 years of production, it's hard to make a good case against Antonio Brown. He's at worst the second best receiver. I mean, his numbers are, like I say, I mean, 115 catches and 129
no argument.
Yards and touchdowns and the spectacular nature of those and so on and so forth. But I know how this is going to end. So
hang on. So would you agree with
that? But let me just say this. We're talking about going into 2015.
I understand.
And I think Eli is now playing in what?
Eli with that
should have a monster year.
I understand. Yeah, right. I understand. Where would you put Antonio Brown?
I'd say Tony Brown is a top three.
Top three. Okay.
Top three receiver.
All right.
I think we've all kind of flipped the switch now from like, let's rank things that happened in 2014 to now let's rank what we think is going to happen in 2015.
I think
when you have that conversation, you've got to say that Odell Beckham is up there with Antonio Brown and Megatron.
Great point.
As those top three guys.
Great point. I tell you this, though, I would definitely take Brown over AJ Green. But let's go J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, I would say, is hands down the best defensive lineman in football. Any disagreement there?
No.
Okay. All right. So the point I'm making is that these are the guys in the MVP discussion, okay? The guy that finished third in the MVP voting, second overall among offensive players, everyone puts down on the list on quarterbacks. Yet with every other position, the guys that are in the MVP race are at the top. I'm not trying to make a case. If this wasn't Romo and it was someone else, I'd make the same case. How can J.J. Watt clearly be the best defensive lineman? And how can DeMarco Murray was someone you were huge on, okay? How can he be DeMarco Murray in the top three or four running backs? But the quarterback who leads the NFL in passing is the second highest ranked MVP candidate offensively be all the way down at the bottom of a list. I only had Romo at 5 for the record. I don't have him higher than 5. But
I think that's
weird to me.
Well, it is weird, but you're looking at it in isolation. I think everyone recognizes the Cowboys as surprisingly good as they were last year. Dave, I think you had them as the 30. I mean, and I'm not saying they were going to have the worst record in football. And I'm not here to make fun of that.
That had more to do with that. I thought the defense was going to be
right,
the all time.
And
worst,
I think we all did. But I think it was a surprise. But I don't think anyone is coming out of last season thinking anything other than the offensive line and the fact that there was a running game. The Cowboys were, you know, football's premier running team last season. So I don't think you can everyone has that in their mind. I don't think you can then say, and also they had the best quarterback in the game last year, which
totally
isn't what
agree.
You're saying. But you know, that's why people aren't giving
it
Tony
is
Romo
interesting
the
that if the rise so if Tony Romo is a constant but the team was 8-8 but then they spike improbably in 2014 when he remained a constant but other pieces were brought in, well then he's not the key.
Okay, but I believe in
he was made better by the running game. I think Tony Romo definitely is a top 10 quarterback, but the reason that no one's talking about him as the 1-2-3 quarterback is because there are guys like Aaron Rodgers. You take Aaron Rodgers out of that Packers offense, we've seen what happens.
Let me tell you this.
It falls apart.
Here's how I approach it.
You take Tony Romo and you put Brandon Weeden in the Cowboys offense, if he's handing off the ball last season to DeMarco Murray, they're still winning games.
I don't want to get sidetracked in the Aaron Rodgers conversation, but I do say, I think Aaron Rodgers has covered up for for some of those seasons that he's been the starting QB, so a really mediocre, if not lower half of the league.
I agree.
Talent-wise. And but they always win the division, which isn't the case. I know you get so not just the QB's fault.
No, I
else,
agree.
They,
I don't disagree with anything you are saying.
But let me just tell you my answer to your question. Why would I put anybody ahead of Romo given where he rated in the MVP discussion? Because
no, why would you put eight guys ahead?
I'm telling you why. Because it's a very specific approach I take, but it is, if I don't tell you anything about the conditions of the game, what defense they're playing, mm-hmm. or what weapons the guy has on his side of the ball, what quarterback do you want then? Then I defy you to go through the list and say, I mean, like, well, Romo definitely is just – so you're basically talking about unconditionally, in a vacuum, who's the best quarterback? Rodgers would be good on any team. Roethlisberger wins, you know, whatever deficits you put around him. I mean, like I always point out,
they've had some losing
those
seasons.
Two guys, I know, but those two guys, Rodgers and Roethlisberger, have done it behind bum offensive lines. That just to me is monstrous that they can thrive behind that. And then once you get behind that, like, I guess you're right about, you know, you could make a pretty good argument that why would Romo be behind Andrew Luck? You know,
There's no reason for Romo, other than perception.
But I am saying, though, well, Tom Brady has been more nails over his career. I know he's had failures, but he has risen and been nails. I always point, you know, whatever deflate nonsense, whatever else, he did it against the Seattle Seahawks. He rallied them from double digits. So, no, you can't put anybody above him. Russell Wilson, talk about nails. I know he's in a great situation.
The best.
Yeah, but he is still, and it's not like he has great pass catchers.
But that doesn't.
I know, but I'm just telling you, he does have. He is on a great defense. He's got a great running game. He's got a good offensive line.
He has a historic defense.
I know. Stop emailing me and texting me and tweeting me all the time, Seahawks fans, by the way. Yeah. I know your offensive line was banged up last year, ergo it didn't rank in the top five or six. But when it's right, it is now I don't know without Max Unger, but in the preceding 3 years, you had a very good offensive line. Stop telling me that Russell Wilson did it behind a rubbish offensive line. That's just silly talk.
Let me just say that I agree with both of everything you guys are saying contextually, but I also believe that if you're going to use that context for one player, you have to apply it to another. So if you're going to lament Cam Newton's supporting cast, if you're going to lament, you mentioned the Cowboys in 2013. Tony Romo had them at 8-7. Competing for the division title. He hurt his back in a comeback win over the Redskins. Yes, a clutch comeback win in which he has the most comeback wins of any quarterback in football, mind you, over the last 4 years. He had him at 8-7 with the NFL's worst defense of all time, statistically. Worst. The Cowboys' yards per game allowed in 2013 is, I believe, the highest yards per game allowed in the history of pro football.
Let me ask you this.
What was DeMarco Murray before last year? He's a decent running back.
All those things
that
are
hurt.
Valid, and this has to do on some level with gut, but it also does have to do with what your eyeballs have shown us. Can you say deep down, if I hook you up to a lie detector right now, and the fate of the planet is in the balance, and I lay out for you the scenario that I did a minute ago, you don't know the defense, you don't know if it's rainy and muddy or snowy or it's in a dome, I don't know if my offensive line is good. I don't know what weapons I have to throw the ball to. All I'm telling you is you can pick your QB. Can you honestly tell me that you're going to feel good about Tony Romo over most of the names that I have? I think I would take Phil Rivers over Romo. I would take, as I say, Rodgers and Roethlisberger and Brady. I think, you know what, I think when I think about this, I wrote this a week ago, so I'm allowed to change my opinion. Maybe I would put Romo ahead of even Breeze.
Yeah.
But I don't know about Wilson and I maybe even Luck, but I know he's in a great situation, but he has also been the key factor in them pulling games out in tight games in the fourth quarter consistently.
Sure. You know, I think there's a real question about Hank, about being clutch at the end of a game, like the very end. So Romo has the game-winning drives. He seriously does have the most game-winning drives, but there's that stat about him in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. That stat.
So if you asked me, hey, would you rather have Andrew Luck or Romo in a two-minute drill? I'd rather have Andrew Luck. However, for the other 58 minutes that determine the outcome of the game, I'd rather have Tony Romo. Troy Aikman, just FYI, was not a great two-minute quarterback. He wasn't.
Right.
But Troy Aikman didn't make the harebrained throws that John Elway did where John Elway trusted his arm too much in the third quarter and threw that interception, and then they were partially coming back from his own mistakes.
Well, Troy Aikman, I believe, is criminally underrated as a quarterback, even though he won all those Super Bowls.
That's an interesting
discussion. We talk about Simmons, and he and Sal, you know, Cousin Sal from mm-hmm. the Kimmel Show, these two, and Sal's second boy, his middle name is Romo. So it's not like he's not biased on this. And they both agree that Troy Aikman is the closest to shouldn't be in the hall of any player
really?
In the Hall of Fame. In the last 20 years, he's the most questionable the Hall of Fame.
How do you
Troy
feel?
Aikman, Aikman is – I can't imagine what you say to say he doesn't deserve it.
An easy argument if someone wanted to make it because of the supporting cast he had, because of that defense.
If you win three Super Bowls, you have to go in.
Of course you do.
Nothing, what else
of course
you
he was so accurate, and he just didn't – he didn't make boneheaded mistakes.
And he was good
but
in those
that's
Super
not,
Bowls.
It's not like he's Alex Smith, and they were saying, all right, let's just pull it back. You know, he was a great quarterback who was able to do things.
He made those manly throws. I mean, he could hit Irvin 20, 25 yards down the field on the sideline
exactly.
and drop it in there. And you hear that phrase anytime you watch a football game. They say he threw it where only his guy could get it. And when you watch, you're like, well, somebody else could have actually gotten in there. He would throw it on a rope and drop it right into Irvin. And you could see, like, wow, the only thing else that could have happened there was Irvin would have dropped it over his shoulder. I mean, he was so precise.
I think part of it, honestly, was, and you've said this about a lot of great players, but he maybe made it look too easy. I think Troy Aikman, from time to time, you're right, he did those type of things, and he did them so often and so consistently and so without being, given the all the hype that was around the Cowboys at that time, and their coach wanted a lot of it, wanted the shine. Emmitt Smith was certainly not shy. Michael Irvin was certainly not shy. Dion was certainly not shy. There was, the whole defense was. There was everything else that came with the being the Cowboys. And because he didn't, require the limelight as much as everyone else, I think people just kind of looked,
it was
took
all
it for granted.
Huge personalities with the ironic right. exception of the QB, right?
The QB, well, of the Dallas Cowboys quarterback when they're at their best period ever.
Having lived there at the time and watching every minute of those games, the closest equivalent to Troy Aikman on the team was Darren Woodson. Darren Woodson did not have that big personality. He was consistently good. Darren Woodson was every bit as good a player as Troy Aikman. Every bit as good. And any Cowboys fan would probably tell you that watched that era. I don't know that I would say Troy Aikman was overrated. But if you told me who I'm more passionate about, it's definitely Romo. Because I think people are so illogical about... Like some people,
I know you do.
They're illogical. I mean,
well, like I just talked about, everybody's so quick to be snarky and cynical about everything. But don't put me into that sea of voices. I just admitted I underrated.
Yeah, I get you.
Romo here, but admittedly, I also just said, well, part of it is gut, but I wouldn't, if the fate of the planet were hanging, Romo wouldn't be in my top.
I think
six
it brings
or seven
up a good
choices
point.
Of guys I'd want to have in there.
I know you're a big Dan Fouts guy. You know, when it's Dan Fouts is held up, has always been held up. But Dan Fouts had three career playoff wins, and his career to me is not much different than Tony Romo's. To me, I don't think passer rating, for example, is the be all end all. Some people like yards per attempt. Some people like winning percentage. You know, you like wins. Romo's winning percentage is high. His yards per attempt is almost the highest in NFL history. His passer rating, even if you don't like it, it was 20 points higher than Phillip Rivers last year. 20 points. We're not talking about 5 or 8. I mean, even if you don't like a stat, let's say you think home runs is overrated. Okay? Like home runs, look, you got to look at other things. But when one guy's got 46 and the other guy's got 24, you kind of got to give it up. You know,
all right,
and that's interesting because Rivers and Romo are, there's sort of chunks of quarterbacks at the moment that are sort of ranked together, and I think until last season, Rivers and Romo are often grouped together.
Yeah, wherever, they're both great.
Somewhere towards after 5 at the back end of the top 10. After last year, I would put, although Rivers had a nice season, I would put Romo ahead of Rivers.
I'm suddenly thinking about this. Who would you rather have? It's a fun little game to play. Let's just do a couple of them real fast. Current QB or best QB in the franchise's history? Would you rather have Aikman or Romo?
He just answered that question ad nauseum.
All right, I guess that's fair.
Actually,
what about
isn't that what just happened? Actually, no, I'm gonna
behind this offensive line.
I'd rather have Aikman because of all the other stuff. Aikman was a leader, dude. He stepped in that huddle, and those guys did what he said.
With a lot of personalities in the huddle.
Yeah, I want to just tell you one little side story that I've always thought is interesting. It's kind of fallen by the wayside. I don't think I've ever told it on the podcast before, but Troy Aikman in the late 90s took some serious criticism in Dallas because they had an assistant coach, I think it was John Blake, who said that he was racist, that he only yelled at black players. And the first guy that went out and defended him was the kooky guy, Charles Haley, who said his quote literally was, "Look around that huddle, man. It's all black faces. Who do you want them to yell at?" You know, at this point, Jay Novacek was gone. You know, Mark Tuinei was gone.
LaFleur hadn't filled the starting job.
Yeah. But, you know, literally, it's like, come on, dude. There's not a guy on that team or in the organization that didn't respect Troy. And sometimes if you want to pick something about Tony Romo that might be lacking, it's not him in the clutch, because I can give you a ton of numbers that prove it. It's the leadership thing, I think, that he might lack.
You see, and it comes through the television screen, really, I think when you watch him play in Detroit in the playoffs this year and everything else, you can tell he is carrying the weight of all the years where he didn't get it done.
These guys
who claim that they – Clayton Kershaw, I don't notice all that. Peyton Manning, I don't hear all that. No, that's nonsense. Yeah, you hear it. You're fully aware.
I know that there are all the numbers to back him up in the fourth quarter. I don't think Tony Romo really believes those numbers.
I think Tony Romo really knows.
I think that's fair.
I think his head is, oh, no, there could be an interception coming. You definitely can see that.
Let me ask you this as a fan, Hank. If another quarterback not named Tony Romo brought his team back in the fourth quarter against the second-ranked defense in the NFL, don't you think they'd get a little more credit for it?
I have to answer this.
That was a ridiculous – you talking about the Lions game?
They were the second-best defense in the NFL last year.
Well, I think you also remember some terrible calls in that game.
Both ways, but yes, I don't see it. I mean, then we could talk about Green Bay.
All right, I don't want to talk about
the whole thing sidetracked.
I want to play my game. Let's go through the –
keep going.
So, Theismann or RG3? Or I guess it would be Sammy Baugh, really.
Yeah, I don't.
This isn't a good game? You don't
No, I like it. I like the game. I'm not
sure. Sims or Eli?
Eli.
Ooh.
Eli over Sims. I think so, too.
I think so, too.
Randall Cunningham? Is that who we go with from the Eagles? I mean, well, Norm Van Brock.
Yeah,
I'm talking Super Bowl.
Super Bowl era. Super Bowl era. So who is our choice, Cunningham or who? McNabb?
McNabb would be the other choice.
Or they're starting now. So McNabb or Sam Bradford is.
I would take McNabb.
Yeah.
McNabb in his prime.
This is kind of an unfair game. You can't do best ever. You kind of have to do the previous generation or something like that.
Roethlisberger or Bradshaw?
Roethlisberger.
Okay.
Brad Johnson.
That's a big call.
Winston.
That's a big call, though.
Brad Johnson or Jameis Winston?
Brad Johnson.
No. You know what? So we all did our ratings. You want to talk about if I'd done one more, if I'd gone to 16, I would have done it actually to see what the reaction would have been. But I legitimately think by the end of by Christmas, Jameis Winston will be comfortably one of the upper half QBs. I think people will say he's going to be great from day one. You wait and see. Hear me.
Ryan Tannehill will knock him down a spot, though.
That's the only guy who might get in his way. Matt Stafford's there. We know what Stafford is at this point. I think Ryan Tannehill. Keep in mind too. I just talking to the Finnsiders.
Invite me along to that?
No. But you should get on the horn with them.
With Aubrey Beers and
you'd love
Troy
talking
Stratford.
To them all. Oh.
Remember that 727 yards rushing he had in 1987?
You know what's sad is that
strike shortened year.
It's possible when that's when you start ranking QBs, everybody has to point out this guy didn't have the running game, and that guy has a bad defense, and that guy's coach is bad. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Dan Marino, maybe his best pass catcher ever was O.J. McDuffie. That's crazy.
I think actually Irving,
probably Mark
people
Clayton.
Forget, well, Irving Fryer
right.
was more consistent and better. Clayton had like flared up for a couple seasons.
But that's pretty
Mark
bad,
Duper.
Though.
Yeah, he did. Well, Keith Jackson might have actually been his best receiver.
Oh, guys, Duper and Clayton were pretty special early in Marino's career.
But they
Mark
were,
Clayton was better than Duper.
Clayton was better than
and
Duper.
And they were both very good. But would they have been? Would you? Would you, we know who they are? right now.
No,
Clayton went to Green Bay, and I realize it was towards the backside of his career, but he was worthless.
Yeah, they gave him his backside after about 10 games there. But
Mark Malone or Bubby Brister?
Bubby Brister.
You know, Romo was awful.
Speaking on, while we're on the subject, no Romo talks. Seriously, just about supporting cast. I submit to you that this crap about wide receivers has got to go, and I'm guilty of
it. Can we say crap, Pontai?
Yeah.
It's a new world.
Yes.
We're X-rated now. You can say a lot worse than that.
I submit to you that the number one factor in a quarterback's supporting cast, if you don't count the coach, is the defense. Second factor should be the running back, and the third factor should be the receivers. I wrote in the article, I love Russell Wilson. I put him at 7. I think that's fair. But he has the most help in the league. I don't care about his receivers. He has the first defense in over 45 years to lead the league in points per game 3 straight years in a row. If you only have to score 15 points to be in the game, then you have the best supporting cast.
Well,
period.
I mean, this is...
And then you have Marshawn Lynch.
We talked about this earlier in the week or last week. Yeah, 2015 now serves as a huge test for Russell Wilson without the centerpiece, the literal center of that offensive line. And who else did they lose? Their right guard as
well. Wait a second.
Either way.
They've got Jimmy Graham.
I know, but they have Jimmy Graham, which means that they're not going to be as powerful an offense. They're going to have to do it with a little bit more finesse. Now it's on Russell Wilson. All right. Well, but this is the test. If Russell Wilson slides back this year, then Elliott, we will say, yeah, see, that's right. But your boy Pete Prisco from CBS, I don't know if you've seen, is tweeting at you, me, and Bucky saying that Russell Wilson is way, way too high.
Well, I had him at 7. Where'd you have him? I don't remember where you had him. You had it 5, and Bucky had him right around where I did.
Way too high. He's been in the he's the last 2 years he's been in the Super Bowl and was 3 feet away from being the back-to-back champion.
First quarterback to ever have 100 passer rating in his first 2 seasons. I'll tell you what I like about Russell Wilson the most is he knows when to call it a day on a play. Mm-hmm. He will just chuck it out of bounds, or he knows when to decide, okay, it's a good time to run here. That's why I hated the play call in the Super Bowl, not because they didn't run the ball. Just why not give Russell Wilson a run-pass option there to let him either run it in, chuck the ball in the stands, or try to make a throw in the end zone?
Wait, what play?
Yeah. Right.
I've heard about that play. Yeah,
that
no,
play.
I agree with you. Obviously, if you run at the edge and put the pressure on the defense with him and Lynch, that's the play to run there.
The one other thing with the Seahawks this season that's interesting, and Jimmy Graham is obviously the big story. Chris Matthews, who suddenly appeared in the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. None of us had ever heard of him or knew where he came from or everything else. I'm interested to see what, with a legit big target, how that receiving core changes as well with Jimmy Graham.
Well, the pedigree, at least for what it's worth, is Paul Richardson, who they drafted
last year.
Right,
who also
he comes back. That's the guy who might be a sleeper. He was sort of a non-factor for the majority of the year.
Don't forget about Lockett either.
Don't tell me about the Seahawks, Tennessee. Why don't you support your home state team? You vibe to the team that plays 4,500 miles away from you?
Yeah, you should be wearing a Frank Wycheck jersey, not a Jimmy Graham jersey. But.
Shame on you, sir. Or at least you should be a Broncos fan in support of Peyton Manning.
Yeah, think about
Tennessee
that
hasn't put anybody else in the NFL in the last 15 years. So.
My gosh. Get out. Aaron Foster, really? He's nobody. Get out.
I kid.
Here.
You know,
Tennessee football fans, though, or University of Tennessee football fans suffer from that syndrome. It happens more in college football than it does in any other sport where the fan base doesn't realize that they're no longer a powerhouse, but they continue to carry themselves. It's like a woman who's 49 who was a model and conducts herself. She comports herself like, yeah, the door swings open for me. And what I say gets done by men because they want to be. No. That was true. That's not true anymore. Nobody thinks Tennessee has any value.
Top five.
Fantastic.
Butch Jones is turning the corner. Back-to-back top five recruiting classes. We'll win the East the next 3 years. Write it down.
Well, you have good uniforms. I'll give you that much.
Hey, on Jimmy Graham, man, is it possible that he's a little overrated? I mean, in the sense that I was talking to Steve Weiss in the newsroom and
name dropped.
Well, there's a reason. There's a real reason New Orleans dealt. There's a reason New Orleans dealt him, and there's a reason New Orleans dealt Kenny Stills. Okay, and
wait, what?
In other words. I think that New Orleans in some ways is trying to get the locker room right. and they need consistency. And guys, Jimmy Graham is not a consistent player. He's a guy that can have huge days in the NFL and then be absent in other games for them, in pockets in games. It's like, where's Jimmy Graham? And if he was such a – could you ever imagine right now New England trading Rob Gronkowski? No way. But these guys get compared all the time. And to me, there's no comparison between these two players.
I'd agree with you on that.
I'm not sure Seattle's going to be better with Jimmy Graham. They were good with what they had.
This is a fascinating experiment they're conducting. And, yeah, I can't wait to see what happens in that division. AFC East is juicy. We have a lot to talk about as we run up the football season here. The two Easts. I don't think you can make a case that DC is going to win the division with Jay Gruden and all their tumult at QB. But the other three teams are reasonable picks to win that division. The West is ironically, I guess the 49ers ain't going to win it, but the Cardinals and the Rams should be fun to see what they can do this year. But Handsome Hank's division. I mean, all four of those teams can win the division. The Browns ain't winning the North in that, but those other three teams can win that division.
I think this. I mean, I'm with you, and we've talked about these. I think the AFC South is sneaky. Could be.
Oh yes.
Could be really fun this season as well. You like the Texans a lot. I like the Texans. The Jags could. If Blake Bortles suddenly, if he comes alive, he's got a little bit of a supporting cast there. That could work out nicely. The Colts are obviously going to be good. Who knows what Marcus Mariota is going to do in the pros? I think. That's a fun, that for the first time that could be a really and that I can remember.
I agree
in a
with
while,
you about the other three.
It's going to be a fun division.
As I've told you, the Texans are going to win that division. That's Damashek's first bold prediction of 2015. But the I'll be interested to see.
I'm not predicting anything out of it. I just think there is more intrigue in that division than there's those Jags Titans games. The Texans when things fell off whatever 2 years ago after they'd been in the playoffs for a couple years in a row. That's more interesting than it's been.
All right, let's talk about Mad Men for a second here. And very quickly, though, Tannehill, do you really believe he'll be top 12, 13 by year's end?
I think that's where he should be.
Oh, that's what I started to say about Tannehill.
Oh, good, okay.
So I said to your pals at the Finnsiders.
They're not my pals.
My pals.
Yeah, they're right. Your pals.
Well, but you share a love for turquoise and orange.
Right.
They asked about Tannehill, and, in the 21st century, I think everybody is now pretty much up to speed. All the GMs and coaches have gotten over that rhetoric, that 20th century rhetoric about the young man needs to learn at the knee and all that. And with few exceptions, if a guy's drafted in the first round, he is immediately the starter, and you expect him to deliver on that in the first season. You don't expect him to have a Troy Aikman rookie season anymore. Mm-hmm. You to get his feet wet, you want him to be good immediately. Tannehill is caught up in that. Because obviously he was a high first round pick, but when he was going in, he'd only played quarterback for 1 year at A&M. It's everybody else plays in pro style offenses, spread offenses that lend themselves to the transition, but not Ryan Tannehill. He's a guy, unlike a lot of those guys of his generation, where I feel sure we have not seen his best yet.
No, I think he still hasn't hit.
Where some guys, we know what some of these guys are at this
right.
point.
Right. So, as you say, he's basically 4 years into his career as a quarterback. I mean, and every year he's got better.
Yep.
Every year he doesn't. He seems like he's a smart guy. You've spoken to.
He's a delight. He's positively good humored. Right. I had some laughs with him and everything.
But he doesn't do is make the same. Like as a fan watching him, he doesn't make the same mistake twice. He's pretty good at going, okay, I realize that was a mistake and learns from it and moves on. If he keeps progressing it as he has done the last couple of years, everything's on the way up. His completion percentage went from 58 to 60 to 66% last season. His yardage went up. His TD to interception ratio's gone up.
Rating went way up.
And his QB rating went from 76 as a rookie, 81 second year, to 92 last year. I mean, things are trending in the right direction. I guess the question is, where does he plateau? Does he plateau as the 13th best quarterback in the NFL, or does he keep getting better and get up to
Who are his pass catchers now?
Well, this
I get
year,
Jarvis,
now my
Jarvis
brain is
Landry.
Getting,
Jarvis Landry,
who was good in the second
Devontae
half of the
Parker,
season.
Devontae Parker, who was the first round pick. Kenny
yep.
Stills.
They lose
yep. Charles
Clay, Jennings,
Hartline, Jordan Cameron.
Wallace. Okay,
Jordan
Cameron.
Cameron's a tight end. Clay is in Buffalo.
So you get good health, right? So if you get good health out of those top three pass catchers, that's pretty good.
And I think Mike Wallace led a fairly unhappy receiver core last year. You know, there was dissatisfaction across the board. Bill Lazor built an offense that probably didn't maximize the skills of a Brian Hartline, who's not a stellar receiver anyway, but a kind of been a comfort blanket.
He's in Cleveland.
He's in Cleveland, exactly. So but Hartline, he didn't suit that new Dolphins offense. The guys they've got there now should probably be better in that offense as well. I think he has every reason to continue to improve.
Sheck, you know what?
Better, Lamar Miller right. coming on.
Since you and I
Jay Ajayi.
That's right.
You and I were copied on some of the same tweets, you know, about our list. And, you know, I'm sure you had one guy that you were hammered the most. I was hammered the most for choosing Alex Smith as kind of my wild card for 10. But was there any guy on your list, as we wrap the QB talk up, is there anybody on your list that you were surprised you weren't hammered about? Because I have one. I thought for sure I was going to get killed on Twitter, and I didn't get one comment about it. Not one out of hundreds.
No. Romo was the one that stood out. People thought Cam Newton was too high for me at number 7. I had Roethlisberger at 2 over Brady at 3. Of course, all the Patriots fans suggested I'm a tremendous homer.
I'd Roethlisberger at 3.
Yeah, I mean,
and by the way, listeners, you can read this thing at NFL.com/top10QBs, where not only can you read Dave, Bucky, and Elliot's list, the top 10, but you can also today, each of you addressed some of the comments that were made on social media.
And then
media.
There are comments. That's always the treat. Any
comments about the comments that you addressed?
Pro tip. When you're on NFL.com and you're reading, you read somebody's piece, make sure you visit the comments section because that's
there's
the real
some
treat.
Fun,
that's
some
the
fun
real stuff. Treat. And I like to interact with those people. And people say, why would you do that? Oh, my God. It must
it's fun.
Really, it's because it's funny, the things people say on there. But I've noticed that people have already started supplying comments to my comments on their comments.
Yes.
And they felt I was disrespectful once again.
Jeez.
Well, listen, what do you want me to say to you?
I thought I was going to get killed, Chick, for having Andrew Luck 6. I thought for sure people were going to be – and not no one. And I think people are catching on that, yeah, he's a good player, but he's kind of become the new Teflon Don that never takes any criticism. And let's just tap the brake before we anoint him a Hall of Famer just yet, you know, and let him, you know, let him develop like everybody else.
Last QB question. If he retires today, Tony Romo, Hall of Fame.
I think so.
Oh, handsome.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I really don't. I'm not saying that to be a jerk. I don't think he would get into the Hall.
I think because he's had so many. I don't want to start.
I know, but well, yeah. I just don't think he would. But if he goes deep one time, if he
I wouldn't
if he,
mind
if he
wins
if he, didn't. If he wins a Super Bowl, he's in the Hall of Fame.
But do you have to win a Super Bowl
no,
to be in the Hall
don't.
Of Fame?
Well,
why
you
it's
don't,
funny
but
is,
he has to cancel out a few things.
People will disagree with me about the first part of what I'm going to say, but I guarantee you, barring injury to him. Eli Manning's going to the Hall of Fame because of the numbers he's going to put up in the next 2 years with Odell Beckham and
Insane.
Victor Cruz. He's going to go, and he has the 2 rings, and whether people like it or not, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. The guy who's on the fence is Phil Rivers, and who's better between Phil Rivers and Eli? Clearly, Phil is the superior QB, so it's funny to think. I mean, I guess some people argue the premise that Eli's going, but trust me, he's going to the Hall of Fame. All right, real quick, handsome. Mad
yes.
Men. Do you watch it, EH?
I've watched it intermittently. I haven't watched it straight on through all the way. I've been trying to choose between that, Game of Thrones, and True Detective, and I think True Detective is the one that I'm actually going to watch straight on through.
Well, True Detective, we've discussed
that here.
It's
only 6 episodes. There are some pretty large.
What is it, 8, 9 episodes, really, or 8 episodes?
But I've watched probably 15 episodes of Mad Men.
Well, I enjoyed the finale, or I should say I enjoyed parts of it. I loved the Draper story, although, as my pal Feeney pointed out, you immediately, from the moment you see him in the car, the opening shot of the finale is Draper speeding in the, you know, in the desert,
yes.
Trying to set land speed records or whatever. I thought, all right, hopefully this is short-lived, and then we'll get him back to New York, and we'll see him with his people. We don't want to spend the last episode with a bunch of strangers, but that's exactly what happened. But I thought the way they rounded out his story was pretty good, or was very good, and I liked the Sterling stuff from a comedic standpoint and seeing him happy and everything else. I thought the Peggy stuff, little...
It was a little saccharine. It was all a little neat, you know. It wasn't the end of anyone's life. It was just everything. It tied up too many. I know that you're not a fan of how True Detective ended because you wanted an ending. this had.
I didn't appreciate that the whole thing was about was an atheist, but, and then
I didn't mean to, but what I mean is, this right, it was all too comfortable.
Yes, but John Hamm, I read an interview the day after that he gave, actually on Monday after the show had ended, and he said, you know, he's reading about people saying it was rom-com-y and everything else, and Peggy specifically having her romance come out of nowhere with her.
By the way, with that, so I couldn't remember, but doesn't Rizzo, that's his name, right, Stan? He had a wife. Did he have a wife?
There was he had a nurse. Girlfriend.
There was a nurse that he was living with. I thought that was his
wife. That was just his girlfriend. Right. You know, and I thought too. It seemed like it was written by Michael Patrick King. It seemed like a scene in from Sex and the City the way it was written. But Hamm points out it doesn't say Peggy and Stan work out long term, and Joan doesn't necessarily. Her business doesn't necessarily work and thrive. It's just this, we're leaving them in a happy spot, but the whole thing has been a little bit of a fly on the wall kind of experience. You know, we don't join Don at the start of anything. We pick him up in his life, and we've watched 12 years of this operation. But I didn't like the language of it. I just didn't like the, you know what, now that I think about it, I think I am in love with you, and the running down the hall and all that. I thought, too hokey. Too hokey for me. And I didn't like Pete Campbell also. That was, that was too easy.
Yeah, and he's such a disgusting.
Does that happen
being.
In life? I just don't buy that happens. I don't care even if you like, if you hate him. Like, that's how life resolves itself. I've decided we're back together. Let's move to Nebraska.
Right. I just landed a job in charge of Learjets. We've got our own private jet. You'll get back with me. And she's like, oh, okay, actually, I probably would do.
But I did. But bottom line, I really did enjoy the what it said. I thought it was very. And then I guess. Again, back to being cynical, my take on it was that Matthew Weiner et al. Were trying to be cynical and showing how disposable the well-intentioned 60s peace and love and all that was, but and just dismissing
just
it
dismissing
as a commercial.
It with the commercial, exactly.
But then I guess Matthew Weiner has since said, well, that's looking at it cynically, of course. That if you take it as a tagline, then that's on you. Then you're a cynic that way. But in fact, it's about positive things. The tagline is merely reflecting what is possible in human nature and all that's good about it. So I didn't see it that way. Right. So now I guess I'm a bad guy.
You know, since I didn't uber geek out on the show and just watched it kind of passively, I would just say that I watched Breaking Bad passively. I watched The Walking Dead very passively. And I think Mad Men was far superior to both. And I know Breaking Bad, their fans just think that's the greatest show in the history of television. But to me, what I notice about Mad Men, you know, everyone talks about the characters all the time. I just love the feel of that show. Like, to me, I don't know that there's ever. I used to watch Rome on HBO. This was back in like 2008, and it had a really cool feel to it. It was too expensive. It was the most expensive show, I believe, at the time in the history of television. You watch Mad Men, I don't know that I've ever seen a higher quality produced show ever.
It's a lovely looking show, that's for sure.
It's amazing. I mean, everything looks legit. You know,
it was stylized and everything else. But yeah, I'm glad that they didn't sell it. I mean, I thought for a split second there, Handsome, were you worried Don is joining this peace and love cult?
I thought he's
going to reinvent himself now as a hippie. Oh no, please don't.
No,
do
that
this.
Wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So when that happened, the show ends, and I've watched the whole thing. You know, at first with my wife, we started watching it on Netflix and catching up with it, and then obviously as it went on, and so I was like, wow, that was an amazing finish. Let's talk about it. She goes, how do you know that's the last episode? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, how do you know they're not just going to make another one? I was like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? We've been talking about this the whole way through. This was the final series. She goes, yeah, I know, but how do you know they won't make... What are you talking about?
See, if Entourage has done anything, now
right, now there's
going to
be a Mad Men movie.
It's not by the way, that's what we're left with. We lose Letterman and Mad Men, and
Entourage.
Entourage movie. Who was out there looking for turtle
who
and
said
drama?
That's what we need.
Ugh.
The least essential thing.
Entourage wasn't
time.
A bad show, though.
Yes, it wasn't a bad show in the first series,
wasn't
but by
a good
series
show.
11, it definitely was a bad show, and it definitely doesn't need a movie.
We need a tiebreaker, if you will.
A porn tiebreaker.
Porn tie. You're the right age. You're the demo for that show. Yep. Entourage, yay or nay?
Yay.
Oh, come on. Why, you think it's cool? You think they're super cool dudes?
It's a hilarious show.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're allowed back on the show. If that's hilarious, you might like to see what these people are up to. But one thing it was never funny. What whatever made you laugh on that show?
A whole bunch of things.
You know? Tell me one thing that was funny.
Tell me one thing that happened that was pretty funny. I honestly really don't remember.
The first time that Ari was angry, it was funny.
Yeah, and that was like what, episode one?
Yeah.
Ari
yeah.
running. That every episode involves him running in one of his fancy suits, and he's unlikable. Adrian Grenier is a terrible actor. Drama and Turtle are two clowns. Who gives a whatever about the
I thought Drama was a pretty good clown.
Yeah, he is.
Drama's the strongest character on that show.
Right.
Come on, bro. Ugh. Shame on you. Shame on you both.
It's no Mad Men. Can I earn some points?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Dave. Just one thing. There's a guy I would like to give a shout out to.
Oh.
I'm not doing a black tie type shout out, but there's yesterday I went out with two of our friends from around the NFL.
Ah. Yeah.
To see Oasis's Noel Gallagher was playing in Los Angeles. We watched a great show. We had a great time. I went with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler from the Around the NFL podcast.
Not familiar with them, but
you know,
I've heard
of them.
I've heard some good
So when the show ends, Noel Gallagher winds up the show by playing a couple of Oasis's great hits, which is what most of the majority of the people in the theater were waiting for. And, you know, everyone's excited. And then as the lights come up, this guy taps me on the shoulder and goes, "Hank, is that you?" And he's a fan of the Dave Damaschek football program and a fan of Around the NFL. His name's Eddie. He was there with his delightful wife/girlfriend/fiance. So little shout out to Eddie who was in the theater last night.
Look who just walked in. Mr. Buzzkill himself, Black Tie.
Black Tie wants to know why Porn Tie allowed this to go on for 2.5 hours.
Do you see what happens to your bits if you don't keep them alive yourself, Black Tie? Handsome now just co-opted shout out.
It wasn't like, "Hey guys, this is a shout out, man. I want to shout out quarterbacks who have sexy deep balls, man.
Bouncers who aren't a it's a real pain being a bouncer checking."
I love the fact
IDs.
That Black Tie had a bit, thought it was okay, and then but we only did it like 4 times.
Oh, okay,
well,
like, I did like 10 times.
"Hey man, I'm going to abandon this now."
One's coming pretty soon.
I mean they're pretty sophisticated. I understand why there's about 7 or 8 month gap between them.
They're pretty sophisticated.
It's tough.
I like the idea of it. If you don't know, the shout outs were, they weren't to his pals. They weren't to "Hey, my sister-in-law, it's her birthday." They weren't those kind of shout outs. He just shouted out to occupations that were worthy
of recognition. It was a good idea. It was a great idea.
The last shout out.
Bathroom attendance and everything.
He could only sustain it for 4
Well,
moments.
I have one to go, but it's kind of tough. So
I want you to do it right now.
I'm sitting on it. So it's not fully fleshed out.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's not fully fleshed out, but let's see if we can make this work. I don't know. You guys are putting me on a spot here.
Time for Black Tie shout out.
All right, we'll just use that as their
theme
song.
Can be that's the.
All right, so because it's not fully worked out. So my shout out goes to Obit producers, so people who have to produce pieces for people who they expect.
What?
Leave the earth pretty soon.
Oh.
So it's like, yeah, you got to prep for it.
Can we have one here?
I love that.
We have one here at the NFL.
Yep. Wait, we have one ready to go for somebody?
No, we have a guy here that does all of them.
His job is to do obits.
Yeah. He does all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I like this one.
So it's
but can you
job.
Tell people what
so
obits
So somebody
are.
Who's long in the tooth.
Exactly.
This would be in the world of pro football. You have to identify that guy's situation ain't looking great. He's going to check out fairly soon.
Hey, we're going to have to bring Mark Barrow in. And Mark, can you tell us about Phil Sims? What did you like about Phil Sims?
About Phil.
I'm giving an example. I'm not saying Phil Sims is a bad guy. But that's the, Obit producer's a bad one. But then they actually have to make, "Hey, Mark Barrow, can you come and talk about Phil Sims?"
I see.
And tell us about what it was.
Ghoulish work, yeah.
But when you do, pretend he's dead.
It's a tough job.
Have you had to do that yourself, Black Guy?
I have not, and I hope I never get to. But it's a tough job to do.
I don't think you're particularly well suited.
Will you do my
emotional guy?
Will you make mine? If I pass,
actually, you know,
can I ask a special favor? Can I ask a special favor if I do die? please hand it off to anybody else.
In all seriousness, Dave,
the worst stuff. I didn't think your line there was as funny as what Khalil Mack said back. So I had Khalil Mack response. You cut me out of my own obituary video. Yeah, well, Khalil Mack's the man. I liked his body language.
Too long winded. You know, I had to go with something shorter bite.
Dave's obit. Dave's seconds. Obit is 2.5 hours long.
Yeah.
rambling start.
Could you have an football elimination chamber of guys that you think are going to kick the bucket?
No, I think that might be a little bit.
Let's not do that, please.
Okay. See, that's real quick. Down this line.
I did talk to Mr. Hanzus and Sessler about this, and in fact, all the around the NFL guys. And now I ask you, Handsome, if Elliot Harrison dies tomorrow, what is the reaction of NFL media? Do they mention him on Total Access?
Yeah, there will be a 25-minute tribute to Elliot, and then they get back to
25 minutes.
The Slate Gate.
Well, I asked the producers. I said, "Well, if Dan Hanzus dies tomorrow, how do you respond on Total Access?" They said, "At the end of the second segment, we would bump out and go to black over a still
picture
shot of him."
I said, "That's all."
That's what they would give.
Would there even be any explanation?
Well, I think it would probably be like...
just written as a graphic.
Well, things may be deflated up in Foxborough. We're feeling pretty deflated around these parts, too, because we've lost one of our favorites here from around the NFL.
You sound like a baseball announcer.
Guy
in the 7th
we didn't really talk to very much. We really didn't try to acknowledge him or his cohorts very much because they weren't on TV with us, but we did bump into them in the hallway, and I believe his name was Dan Hanzus.
This is taking a very, very dark turn.
But we'll be back after the break with
right
the
back?
Flake-gate.
Wait till you see what Ryan Tannehill and the missus were up to in South Beach with all that money burning a hole in his pocket. Coming back on Total Access.
By the way, I love how you guys locked me out when I was trying to get in. Talking Madman spoilers.
Sorry, that's porn time, not us.
I just can't believe that Don Draper.
Why
would they have him lose his arm? What's the point of him not having an arm?
Well, you understand why, though.
I mean, I do. I get the metaphor of him not having one of his arms, but it also
he's
like that's
legless.
A weird way to leave him.
He's been legless for a lot of his career
legless.
In the office. And now
that's
he
what
ends
my,
up
my
sending him
on,
for drunk.
My headset is on mute right now, so.
Okay. Well, that's
keep
that.
It that way.
That's it. So we're done now. I can't
should
believe...
we close the show, Hank?
Yeah,
I mean, we opened it. We should
yeah,
be closing
we should close it.
Why
right?
did Peggy move to Madrid? Whoa. I don't know. Sorry.
Oh, I forgot you were there. I thought your headset was on mute. Lucky you didn't hurt.
What's Draper going to do without his right arm, though? Is the other?
All right. Is that right?
Yeah, that's
did I do that right, Hank?
How
you
goes.
Should. You host
no,
it.
No,
maybe.
You can do this. But
shouldn't it be dueling? I'll do Elliot. We got to do a whole show this way. Let's.
You always want to do me though.
I know. Well, I have to. I'll do Handsome. Black Tie does me.
It's confusing.
Elliot does.
I'll do Black Tie.
You do Black Tie, and that leaves.
I'm doing Hank. No, you're doing.
Oh,
no,
so I'll
you'll
do Elliot.
You
do and
Elliot.
You do Hank. All right.
Okay, you do Hank. All right. All right. I'll start here.
All right.
Hey guys, we gotta wrap it up now, man. This is going on way
hey,
too long,
hey,
Dave.
Hey, hey, hey. Look at here now. I understand about you love your Ben Roethlisberger. I respect it. I respect that in a man who stands by where who knows where he came from. You understand? But Tony Romo wears that star on the side of his hat. And when you put that on, you get a lot more than you bargain for. It's about a lot more than what you got attached to that right shoulder. There's a world of pressure.
Got to wrap.
Talk
to
rap. America's team.
I have a meeting.
All right. We've done enough. We've talked football. We've talked Mad Men. We've talked.
You're not even trying to do a voice.
Producers. Let me get to it. Oh, sheesh. All right. We've done that. Obit producers. Enough's enough.
Man,
it's been a thin slice of heaven. That was awful. Okay.
That was very disappointing.
That was
you already
rough.
Ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, no.
I kind of want to, Dave, since I'm trying to decide what to watch here, I kind of want from you guys an elimination chamber between these four shows.
Okay, Breaking Bad,
Breaking
Mad
Bad,
Men,
Mad
Men,
True Detective. Wait, Breaking Bad, and Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Elimination
Game
chamber.
Of Thrones, Ooh. Mad Men, True Detective, Breaking
well,
Bad.
I mean, this is a hard one for me because I don't love I love True Detective was my favorite through 7 episodes. The 8th episode sickened me. So I can't recommend that one.
But well,
so that would be it. I guess I would have Breaking Bad's the most exciting. Mad Men ain't for everybody. That's the one that is the most, you know, the as I always say, the message is nuanced. The,
right.
The,
I would
the
say
aspect
Mad Men.
Of,
I'd say Mad Men might be a bit too cerebral for you, Elliot.
Wow, that was a spear in the back from 400 yards.
I would say True Detective is good because. Wow. Because it's very short, and you will be able to remember what happened in the first episode.
Oh, see, that's good. You'll remember that.
Hey, I'm going to tell you right now.
All right, so we'll wrap it up there. Handsome and Elliot as Dave, go ahead, send us out to break. We'll be back next week.
It's been a thin slice of heaven. Dave, come back again. You can come join us anytime.
You can catch his power rankings. Follow him at NFL UK Hank. And by the way, Mustard's coming back, everybody. Coming back.
Ooh, that reminds me of Memorial Day. Let's go get wieners, everybody.
Thanks, guys. I can do a lot of things. Impressions is not one. Except movie characters.
Son of a gun.
Cold open.